This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tonight, the Republican presidential candidates will meet in Iowa for the final debate of the year and the last one before the Iowa caucuses on January 3rd. Then, hot on the heels of Iowa, comes the New Hampshire primary on January 10th.
And if the recent behavior of the frontrunners, Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich, is any indication, tonight's debate could make for some interesting viewing.
Let's be candid. The only reason you didn't become a career politician is you lost to Teddy Kennedy in 1994.
If he was there because of his political connections, and then if Freddie Mac fails, I think a fair question is asked. Why did he profit?
If Governor Romney would like to give back all the money he's earned from bankrupting companies and laying off employees over his years at Bain, that I would be glad to then listen to him.
He lashes out at me and lashes out at the free enterprise system.
So the candidates are feeling punchy. But what about the mood of actual voters? Joining us now to discuss presidential politics and to preview tonight's debate is Radio Boston's political roundtable, Jack Clancy. He's our Republican analyst. Hi there, Jack.
Hi.
And Susan Tracy, our Democratic analyst. Welcome back, Susan.
Hey, Meghna, thanks.
All right, well, let's first talk about what's going on in Iowa. What do you expect from the debate tonight?
What I have found interesting is, you know, Romney is the nice guy, and I think most of us would think of Gingrich as the mean guy, and despite the couple of clips beforehand, I think it's been very interesting to watch Romney trying to take on Gingrich. He's not that good at it. All the other candidates who have ascended in the Republican Party have fallen on their own weight, and Romney has just had to wait it out. This one, he doesn't have the opportunity to wait it out. He needs to take him on. He's not comfortable with it. And Gingrich is kind of a little bit turn the other cheek, and I want to run a positive race. It's kind of contrarian. I think it works to Gingrich's advantage.
I think Susan's right on point there. I think Mitt probably shouldn't attack. He's not good at it, as you said.
Yeah.
And Newt, obviously, very good with the quips. We just heard one, and he's got plenty. I'm sure he's ready to throw out tonight. So Mitt has to be a little more straightforward, deal with the facts, don't attack, try to adhere to Ronald Reagan's 11th commandment. Republicans shouldn't attack Republicans, and he'll probably do better for it.
Mm. Now, the conventional wisdom has been that due to the power of, say, the conservative evangelical voters who populate many of the Iowa caucuses, the thinking was that Mitt Romney would never win there anyway. However, we have a new poll out by the Rasmussen Company today that for the first time ever shows Romney just a couple points ahead of Newt Gingrich. He's polling at 23%, Newt Gingrich at 20%, and Ron Paul at 18%. And the big headline there is that Gingrich, not that long ago in Iowa, was at 32%. So what are we to make of this basically like now very tight bunching between these three candidates?
Well, I probably wouldn't make a lot of it because caucuses are very different. Jack and I mentioned this briefly to each other just prior to here. And, if you go to one of these Iowa caucuses, if somebody has better food in one corner, they might get more votes. So it's hard to I think it's hard to poll on these races. And, Romney has put some effort into Iowa over the last few weeks. And this race has crystallized. So no surprises that you'd see some movement in numbers. But I think caucuses are just too hard to poll.
Jack, do you really agree? I mean, this is the first time that Romney's polled ahead of anyone else in Iowa.
I think for Romney and his crowd, they're opening the champagne tonight. I think it's a good poll for them.
Premature.
I would say so. But I mean, they had no hope. They spent $10 million in Iowa last time out, and they've spent less than $1 million this time. Clearly, they didn't even deal with the Iowa straw poll, which Michelle Bachmann won, and who's not even in the top four now. So I think, and he's got a very good ground game with volunteers, but he's not spending any money, and so he's got to feel buoyed by this.
Mm. I wonder if what we're seeing now is the fact that Newt Gingrich does actually have a very long political and public/personal history in the United States, and some of that political and personal history really troubles dyed-in-the-wool Republicans. We found this exchange. It was broadcast this week on C-SPAN between Newt Gingrich and a potential Iowa voter. It's very, very illustrative. Let's listen.
If I was going to go to a caucus on January 3rd and consider voting for you, one of the things that would really trouble me is that respected people, Senator Coburn, Senator Talent, they've called you arrogant and erratic based on their experience with you when they were in the Congress and you were Speaker. How do you answer that?
No, I normally don't answer it.
Well, would you please?
I'm just saying, I am the most practical hardline conservative to serve in the national office since Reagan.
Their criticism was based on your leadership style.
Right, and my leadership style was to go down to the White House and say, I have to have this, what do you have to have? There's an old rule in Congress, go along to get along. I had no interest in going along to get along.
So there's the old Newt that those of us who remember the 90s might find familiar. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jack, is this the kind of thing that's inevitable that may come back to haunt Gingrich?
I think maybe one of the reasons that Democrats may want to see Gingrich as the opponent. He's a loose cannon. I think he can get himself in trouble. The whole contract with America thing in 94, sure, he flipped the House numbers and put Republicans in charge. But then he became so emboldened that he attacked Clinton, shut down the government, and then had to give up his speakership. He speaks a little too highly of himself and thinks too highly of himself. And after having done very well at the last debate, anything could happen tonight. I think he thinks he can say things like Palestine is an invented nation and get away with it. And you may hear more of that type of thing tonight.
Susan?
I think it can cut both ways. I think to have the establishment against him can be helpful to him if he runs against the establishment and says, hey, look, I'm not an insider. He tried to do it a little bit there. So I think there's a plus that he can, and we know he is very good at pulling pluses out of negatives.
Mm. Well, you know, even though we're looking at the Iowa caucuses on the 3rd of January, then New Hampshire on the 10th, and a bunch of other primaries coming not long after that, it feels very front-loaded once again.
Yep.
It seems as if Mitt Romney is behaving as if he's still looking at a long race to secure the nomination. We've got a little bit of tape of him speaking to the New York Times about the possibility of a protracted primary season.
Given the fact we've adopted the Democratic Party's delegate proportional system, that it's very possible ours could go on for a long time. Those early states continue to shout. I mean, they're powerful. They have a big impact. But the later states have a lot of delegates. And I remember in the Democratic process, there were some surprises in the early states, but ultimately, the guy who got the nomination, didn't win in New Hampshire, for instance.
Jack, is this Mitt Romney trying to lessen expectations in New Hampshire?
He may have that as a sidebar, if you will, but he is absolutely right. The proportional representation of this new style has to extend the primary. Delegates are given out by the percentage which they take. It used to be winner take all. Until April 1st, and the Republican delegates will be split up according to the percentage. That's going to make a major change. When you have 2,300 delegates at the convention, and New Hampshire is worth 12, mm-hmm. Iowa is worth 28, South Carolina 25, and then Florida, and you've got Texas at 155, California at 175. It is backloaded with delegates, front-loaded with momentum, perhaps. But the momentum won't carry you through to the big ones. So I think he makes a good point, and it's an important one.
Susan?
I completely agree. I think, you know, might be a little bit of spin there to make him feel good about the, you know, the two in front of him. But I agree. You know, I watched this, and I think we all did with Clinton and Obama. You know, this could go for the long haul. And quite frankly, I think that's to his benefit, and I think he also knows that.
Well, let's take a closer look at some polling that's come out of New Hampshire in the past 24 hours. A Suffolk University poll found that Mitt Romney is still holding in first place at 38%, Gingrich at 20%. And then the surprise in this poll is that John Huntsman pulls in at third place at 13%. And this is a poll of declared Republicans and independents in New Hampshire. So, Susan, your thoughts on the Huntsman dark horse?
Well, my first thought is finally. I mean, you know, everyone else has had their ascension in the Republican Party except for Santorum and Huntsman. So he's got to be thrilled to finally, you know, make it to double digits and be in the mix. You know, I think it's still a long haul for Huntsman. I think he does hurt Romney. I think he's seen as a moderate. I think that he does take votes if you wanted to really make a wild prediction, you might say if Romney fell, he might be a good person to sort of step in as the anti-Gingrich and more of an establishment candidate. Probably doubtful given the Republican primary voter. But the independent vote, you're right, is the key to that. And that's why Huntsman is not competing in Iowa and why he's put all his marbles in New Hampshire.
And just to be clear, Jack, they're key because they're allowed to vote in the New Hampshire
Correct.
Primary.
Correct. Exactly. And so they can vote with an idea of trying to sway the election in a way that would work against their candidate later on if they are indeed perhaps Democrats. Mm-hmm. I think in the case here, we're looking at another fireworks metaphor. I think this candidate rises high and everyone oohs and ahs, and then the flame goes out and he falls down like so many others, like Bachman and so on.
Well, to me, it seemed like, as Susan said, you know, finally, because John Huntsman has been throwing all of his effort into New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. He's got a super PAC spending you know, heaps of money on his behalf in the Granite State. And we've got a little bit of tape of him talking about his specific ground game in New Hampshire. He was on ABC this week.
And all I can tell you, having spent a whole lot of time here in New Hampshire, we've had 116 public events in the state, is that the voters will begin to coalesce around a candidate about a week to 10 days out. I feel very good about their trajectory here in this great state. And this is always the state that upends conventional wisdom. So let's not fall back on the conventional wisdom. That never holds true in the end.
So the Suffolk poll might actually bear him out here because of the voters who were polled yesterday. More than half of them still said, I could still change my mind.
You know, I go back again to the Clinton-Obama race when going into New Hampshire, all of the polling had Obama up by, I think, by 10 points. I mean, he was supposed to win that race. And I think Hillary Clinton won by 10. It was just an amazing upset. So those New Hampshire voters are a little contrary, and I don't think you can count on them.
Jack, I want to ask you another question about what the polls tell us about the mood of voters in New Hampshire in particular, because there seem to be a lot of contradictory impulses. Mitt Romney polls first, Gingrich polls second, but when those same voters who said that they would be likely to vote for Gingrich are asked questions about who they expect the next president to be, they say yes, 20% say Obama, 35% say Romney, and only 18% say Gingrich. So the people who like him don't even think he can make it as president.
You sometimes wonder if New Hampshire voters are just playing with the media or playing with the pollsters. It really almost, you feel that way sometimes. I'll say this, though, about the Suffolk folks who do the polling. Back in the Coakley-Brown race, they got it right on 2 weeks ahead of time. They were the first ones to predict that.
I agree.
And on the day of the election, they hit it on the nose. Same thing with Patrick and Baker. They hit that to the tenth of the point. So I got a lot of faith in these Suffolk pollers. If they could be coming very close.
Well, before we run out of time, I want to sneak in one last piece of tape here. And this is from the Democratic National Committee and who they've still got their sights on. It's Mitt Romney, and here's the latest ad the DNC has put out on its newly minted website, mitts10kbet.com.
I'll tell you what. $10,000? $10,000 bet?
$10,000 bet from a multimillionaire?
Mitt Romney.
And in tough economic times.
All right, Susan, so that 10K bet is in reference to a bet that Romney made with Texas Governor Rick Perry about whether or not Mitt Romney supports an individual mandate in health care. Is this telling you that the Democrats still see Mitt Romney as their most dangerous potential opponent?
Absolutely. My guess is that, they do polling and they look at the numbers and they say, you know what, Mitt Romney's going to appeal to the swing and moderate voters, and that's what we don't want. You know, I might argue it a little bit differently because ultimately it's about swing states and it's about charisma. And I think Gingrich would be a tough opponent.
Susan Tracy is Radio Boston's Democratic analyst. Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks.
And Jack Clancy, Radio Boston's Republican analyst. Great to have you back as well.
Thank you, Magna.
Listeners, we want to know what you think. We're getting closer to that primary. Let us know at radioboston.org. And coming up, the Portland, Oregon-based band Pink Martini returns to Boston with two new albums in tow. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.